I want to suggest to you a dilemma. Supposing that you'd given up alcohol for Lent, and you'd really promised God that you wouldn't drink, and it was really important to you. And one day, your grown-up son came bursting through the front door, holding a bottle of champagne, and said, "Mum and Dad, I've got the most wonderful news. I just got back from the hospital, and the tests, they're negative. I haven't got cancer." So I rushed off, I got the bottle of champagne. "Mum, get the glasses out quick so that you can drink to me, drink to my health." What would you do? That is your dilemma. And I want you to think now to the world that Jesus lived in, where the law was also the law of the spirit. The spiritual laws were the same as the laws of the country. And there were an awful lot of them. The Jewish people may have started with the Ten Commandments, but people were so keen to keep them that they made lots and lots of little laws to kind of go with them to make sure they hadn't broken the Ten Commandments. I mean, for example, not working on the Sabbath day. You were only allowed to travel so far from home on the Sabbath day. But if you were rich and had lots of servants, if people found a loophole. It's very much like people who can afford to have a really good accountant and find loopholes in the tax laws. The richer you were, the more you could convince yourself you were keeping the law, when in fact you'd found a very handy loophole. And this one was really very naughty. The definition of your home was where your possessions were. So you could send your servant ahead of you with a bag full of your possessions, and they would drop them at intervals on the journey. And that way you could travel just as far as you liked on the Sabbath, which is exactly the sort of thing Jesus meant when he said keeping to the letter of the law rather than the spirit of the law. And here he is on the Sabbath day, and the Pharisees have decided that healing someone is work, so he shouldn't be doing it. He was confronting this sort of thing all through his life. And if there's one thing we should have learned from that, it's that Jesus responded to each situation with love and with compassion. And you really would have thought after 2,000 years of this that we would know it. And yet, funnily enough, I still find I come across Christians who are constantly criticizing others. They shouldn't do this. They oughtn't to do that. They ought to do this. They ought to do that. If you don't go to church every Sunday, you're not a Christian. You oughtn't to shop on this. So you know the sort of thing. It just goes on and on and on. But do you know what I've discovered? The people who are very judgmental of other people tend to be people who are very hard on themselves as well. So when we think about not being judgmental, we really do need to apply it to ourselves. And then I think we might find that we're more compassionate and more loving towards others. And think of the word compassion, with passion. Compassion isn't a soft thing. It's a thing that shows real response, almost an angry response to something which is wrong and you need to sort out. The first bit of our gospel today was another such situation. Jesus was walking through the fields with his disciples and they were hungry, poor things. So they started plucking bits of corn. I couldn't help feeling that it can't have filled them up very much, but it was better than nothing. And immediately they were criticized. To pluck corn. Oh no, that's working on the Sabbath. Just think of all those laws. I've always felt a little bit sorry for that priest. You know the story of the Good Samaritan and the priest who walked by on the other side? Well, the reality of that is the Jews had very good hygiene laws, but they'd actually forgotten why they had them. I don't think they probably knew much about germs. But if you touched a dead body, and this would be particularly difficult for a priest, you had to go through a long ritual of purification washing yourself and your clothes, and you also wouldn't have been allowed to work for a while, which would be very difficult for a priest. And there was no difference, they didn't differentiate between bodies of people who died of disease and bodies of people like this poor chap who'd actually been badly injured, because they didn't really understand where the law had come from. And so I've got a bit of sympathy with that priest. It would have been a very difficult situation for him if he'd gone and helped the man on the road and then found the chap was dead and then suddenly be faced with all these laws. So we don't want to be faced with all these laws either. I know I may be being a bit too generous over this, but I feel that this constant, I ought to do this, you ought to do that, she should have done that, and really the younger generation, they really ought to know better, is not really very Christian. I knew a lovely old nun once who used to talk of people who suffered from hardening of the arteries. And as I said, I think the arteries apply to yourselves as well as your attitude to other people. If you're very, as I said, if you're very judgmental towards other people, the odds are you're very judgmental towards yourself. So try to stop beating yourself up. I'm going to go back to that dilemma I hit you with at the beginning. I have a feeling that whichever way you went, you'd end up feeling guilty. I know a lot of people like that. We're often faced with extremely difficult decisions, much more difficult than whether you should drink champagne in Lent. And we don't know which way to turn. So instead of thinking what's right and what's wrong, perhaps it's better to think, what is our motive? What's the most loving thing to do? Can you imagine any God who would judge us if our motive was purely love and compassion? I remember in the days before the ordination of women, but when it was sort of very much being talked about, I heard a young man, I think he was a trainee priest, talking on the radio, and he said, no, I don't see any reason why women shouldn't be ordained, but just supposing I've got it wrong, and I take communion from women, and then when I die and I have to face God, that God will tell me I got it wrong. Well, I can't quite imagine a God like that. I don't know if you can. Not someone where you're standing at the pearly gates and God said, no, wrong decision. So I'm wondering if there's something you could all do during Lent, and I mean me too, that's why I'm saying us and not you, that would help us to become more loving, more compassionate, less judgmental, and more understanding of other people. I mentioned the word ought because, being a rather eccentric person during Lent, I once, some years ago, decided to give up the word ought for Lent. And you're not allowed to put should in its place because that's cheating. Now, there's a thought for what we could do during Lent. So what I'm going to do now, we're going to have a few minutes silence, and then I'm going to pray the prayer of St. Francis, which is a prayer that I've always found enormously helpful to myself. And the comfort of it is that if St. Francis needed to pray it, then he wasn't perfect either. So let's just have a few minutes silence. Lord, make me a channel of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. And where there is despair, hope. And where there is darkness, light. O Divine Master, grant that I may seek to understand rather than to be understood, to console rather than to be consoled, to love rather than to be loved. For it is in giving that we receive, in self-forgetfulness that we find our true selves. It is by forgiving that we are forgiven. It is by dying that we are raised to life eternal. Amen.